Malcolm Hoenlein with us. Time for the weekly update. Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, with us Fridays for the weekly update here at JM in the AM. Mr. Hoenlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you. As always, good to be with you.
Appreciate that. I'm assuming, especially because you have really been encouraging people to get involved in grassroots efforts over the last few months, I'm assuming that this rally that's taking place in Manhattan with over 80 sponsoring organizations, that's what we counted. We counted over 80 of them, which is pretty amazing, frankly. 47th Street, 2nd Avenue, 12 noon, New York City, this coming Sunday. I am assuming you are enthusiastically supporting it.
I'm totally supporting it, and it's very important that people go. There'll be a showing. We see all the counter demonstrations which upset people. Well, the way to send a positive message and to show that we stand with Israel, especially after this very difficult week in U.S.-Israel relations and overall in Israel standing, that we show, stand, and we stand with Israel. And coming up to Pesach, it's all the more, this will be maybe the, you know, big demonstrations that will take place beforehand in Washington. So those in the Washington area, they are having one there, and some other community undertaking them. This week was the 180th day, and it was marked by the Orthodox Union's collection of 180,000 letters. It's really remarkable on very short notice. It shows that people care. I know that people want to do things. So this is an opportunity to take an hour out and go and be part of it.
Washington, Sunday, 2:30 is the gathering time. Washington Monument is the gathering place, 2:30 on Sunday. Also a pretty impressive list of supporting organizations. Again, New York, 47th Street, 2nd Avenue, a place very familiar to those of us who've been to rallies before Manhattan. And that's 12 noon, 47th Street, 2nd Avenue. And Malcolm, not to make that big of a deal about it, you might tell me it's not that big of a deal, that this is certainly not unprecedented, but 80 or more sponsoring organizations, that's a pretty good start when it comes to a show of unity, right?
Yeah, but sometimes there's an inverse relationship between the size of the crowd and the number of organizations that sponsor. So we have to make sure that there's a direct correlation, and the fact that I think that such a broad spectrum of organizations are standing with it and joining shows the support for Israel remains strong in the Jewish community, that are deterred or dissuaded by events, and sometimes even unfortunate events. But there also has to be the crowd there, the numbers there, that we translate a good intention into good deeds.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, hopefully a big crowd on Sunday. Everybody do your best. Families, schools, synagogues, organizations, everybody in your WhatsApp groups, make sure to encourage them to go. All right, so you mentioned the very difficult week, and obviously it was a difficult week, and certainly, you know, terrible tragedy with the aid workers who were killed. I mean, if anybody wants an explanation in terms of what Israel is saying, already plenty of articles about Israel's claim about how things went wrong. And frankly, you know, as you've pointed out many, many times, these you know, second by second military operations and decisions are very hard to criticize when you're not involved in this scenario. And you'll tell us if you're reiterating that position or not. But the real story, frankly, is the American, the world, and the media reaction. It was shocking to me, even with this circumstance, that it was the top story on so many media news outlets. And frankly, the reaction from Washington, also, I think, somewhat unexpected, but you'll tell us what you think. What do you think of the reaction to this terrible episode?
Well, I mean, no one can look at it with indifference. If people were volunteering and they, in fact, coordinated with the IDF, it does appear to have been a mistaken communications and some collapse. As you know, a number of people in the IDF, people who were in the chain of command for that decision, were sacked yesterday. Israel, you know, has taken responsibility from the beginning of this, and they concluded the investigation of the general staff, fact-finding and assessment committee into the incident, which The findings obviously are honest. It was led by Yoav Har-Even, who's a former retired major general, and the chief of staff and others acted on it immediately. They've expressed their sorrow. They've expressed all of their concerns with this. But obviously, in every country from which people came and in others, they took advantage. They are blowing this, obviously, up as a weapon against Israel. The commanders in charge obviously mistakenly assumed that the gunmen were inside that were accompanying them and that they were Hamas terrorists. They didn't identify them as being associated with WCK. And so each step led to another step that up targeting the three vehicles based on a misidentification of them. You know, the fog of war, it happens. It's happened to America and Afghanistan. It's happened to virtually every war and workers who go and volunteer or employed to go into the front lines know that they are taking a risk. It should not have happened. I think taking responsibility is very critical right now, and the apologies issued by the president of Israel, the chief of staff, others, and prime minister leaving the hospital expressed the regret for it. But, you know, this is a propaganda gift to the to Hamas and to all of the extremists who have been demonstrating. So until this settles down. But in the meantime, Israel still has to prosecute the war and has to come to a meaning so that all of the losses are not in vain, that the Rafah remains a very critical decision. The question of how they execute it, not whether, is under consideration now. And so the president and the prime minister spoke. It was not an easy discussion yesterday. It covered mostly the issues related to the seven, but also demand Israel take greater care in dealing with civilian populations, bringing down the total, even though this humane war ever fought in an urban area and the most difficult of urban areas, in which hospitals and every school and apartment and every house is used and exploited as they make the people of Gaza the human shields. We're losing sight. Now the whole onus is being shifted to Israel, and the memory of October 7th begins to fade. And the fact that this could all stop in 10 minutes if Hamas decides not to fight and they surrender and give back the hostages, the war would be over. That isn't happening. Demanded enough of the Hamas. Everybody says, you know, well, it's a terrorist organization, can't do it. Yes, they could. And we could force them to do it. So far, the reports that of famine, we believe, are highly when you see the pictures of the markets in Gaza, they have plenty of food. I think Israel acknowledged that they shipped in 280,000 tons of food since October 7th, that more trucks are going in now than went in before October 7th. Each week, so Israel can be demised, and the you know, there's always possibility that mistakes were made, and nobody wants to see anybody starve to death who's an innocent. But the situation on the ground is quite different than the way it's being portrayed, and in many stations, especially I see it on NPR and elsewhere. I mean, you can't turn on the radio without it being about Israel and some condemnation of what is going on and the distortions and misrepresentation. I just hope our audiences don't fall victim to it. There are military experts who have said there's no evidence of anybody dying of famine. They keep predicting it already for the last 6 months. We're on the verge of it. We're on the verge of it. WCK was doing a great job because they coordinated with Israel. They were not political. They were not a hostile group that went in to do this work. And it makes it all the more regrettable. But understand, don't just buy it because it's reported.
Plenty of people in our community are buying it, I'm sad to say, but this is the feeling I'm getting. over the last couple of days. It's hard to even think of the Rafah operation, which you keep saying, you know, when, not if, but when you have now this directive from the President of the United States that the number one priority has to be, you know, civilian safety. And no matter what, if they carry out this operation, even with the greatest measure of civilian safety, you know what's going to happen. I mean, it's inevitable that obviously civilians are going to be not targeted, but are going to be victims. How does Israel move ahead with an operation like that, with this, you know, being handcuffed by the U.S. the way they are?
So it's not a question of whether they should go in. It's a question of how they go in. And I could see that targeted assassinations, more aerial operations, not on the ground, which is what they keep saying, don't do a ground invasion because you're such a large civilian population. But remember yesterday, they shot missiles again against Israel from northern Gaza.
Yep.
Hamas keeps showing that it is not destroyed yet, that they keep moving their people around to the different hospitals. And you saw the battle in Shefa Hospital. And when you see the building, understand that Hamas fired from those buildings. They did most of the damage to the buildings. Israel went literally building in room by room and found huge stockpiles of weapons in maternity wards, inside pillows. That the whole place had been turned into a military base, and the fact that 1,000 terrorists were caught there. And yet, you know, the criticism is went into the hospital willy-nilly and you know, no concern for the people. They don't talk about the fact that field hospitals have been set up. They don't talk about the facilitation of huge quantities of medicines that Israel sends in. You know, the whole context gets lost, and then says, well, if you don't change your policy, we'll have to consider changing ours. That's an implicit threat that Israel has to take seriously because it depends so much for ammunition and supplies and big sales of F-35s that are pending. So far, they have not stopped, and the weapons shipments continue with the criticism from many in Congress, growing voices in Congress against, and we should use that as leverage and we should demand more because they're extremist constituencies. So the Rafah choice is, I think, one of having to decide how you protect the civilian population, move them out, you do other things, or you resort to more targeted actions that will reduce the destruction and number of victims. It's still one-to-one, meaning one civilian for every combatant that is killed. That is unheard in urban warfare there. And read what that West Point instructor, John Spencer, has been writing and saying that this is the most humane war probably in history, and certainly in urban warfare. So we should not hold a trap. We have to be realistic. Unfortunately, Israel is not totally independent. It will move towards greater independence, I think, in the future. But they face the threat now, Ron, and that was another subject between the president and the prime minister yesterday. And the prime minister, I think, made it clear that if Israel is attacked and then Iran has the capacity to fire ballistic missiles from Iran that would hit Israel, let alone having the capacities in Iraq as they demonstrated this past week by getting a drone through, or from the Houthis and from Syria, that you have multiple fronts, let alone Hamas and Hezbollah, to extract. This is the action they took in Syria was a huge one. They took out really two high, very high-ranking officials and five others. It's an embarrassment to Iran. It makes a difference on the ground. But now Israel has to be concerned about the consequences and make clear that if Iran attacks them, Israel will be forced to take whatever actions necessary and wants to see the world intervene with the Iranians to prevent that.
While the media in Israel is playing this up and, you know, people are buying everything off the shelves, thinking that, you know, God forbid what may happen. There are a lot of commentators still in Israel who do not, who assert that Iran does not want a military reaction from Israel. That even with their reaction, that, you know, and their statements of revenge, that ultimately they really don't want to egg on Israel militarily. Do you believe that?
I do believe that Iran does not want Israel to hit its vital facilities. I think Iran is protecting in a protection. Iran's currency this week hit over 615,000 to the dollar, or in Toman, it's 61,000 to the dollar, and it keeps going down. Their economy is in ruins. The people, as you saw in the election, have turned against the government in huge numbers. They know that, and they don't want to see the war brought to their territory. They do not want to see a huge loss of their massive investments, whether it's in Hezbollah or elsewhere. They saw, you know, they've lost all that they invested in Hamas. But maybe if they're going to buy all new equipment, but the Iranians also have to make a cheshbon, some account about what they do and the degree.
Right.
Right now, they reacted out of anger and they have to threaten, and it's a lot of bluster. But as we've seen in the past, very little action. The war in Lebanon is to simmer and could explode at any time. And everybody knows that they're trying to build up their capacity. That's why Israel has to take the actions in Syria that it does to these huge stockpiles of weapons from reaching Hezbollah or the militia in Syria, which are becoming more of a threat. We also see that the Russians, by the way, have built new observation posts and increased presence and announced that they have in the Golan. It's very small, but it's there, and no factor we have to take into account. So Israel is trying to be very careful with when it's many of them don't take place from Syrian territory. They take place from the sea or from Lebanon. And the missiles are very accurate. They take out very targeted places. But, you know, nobody talks about the 600,000 people were killed in the Syrian civil war, not by Israel. And you know, it cares, seems to care about them, or the Sudan, or the Congo, the Rohingya, any of the other groups that the Chinese can persecute a Muslim population, but see, and with men of death and deprivation. Where's all the outcry? Where's the world that's so concerned about this?
Yet another reason.
Clearly very selective.
Yet another reason to assert that when, you know, someone makes a statement, oh, I'm not anti-Jew, I'm anti-Israel, anti-Zionism, etc., it is very, very hard to believe that. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NahumSegal.com and the Nahum Segal Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app. The rally is Sunday, Washington, D.C., 2:30 p.m. at the Washington Monument, New York City, 12 noon. New York City, 12 noon, 47th Street, 2nd Avenue in New York City, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Long Island. Everyone come out, 12 noon, New York City, 47th and 2nd. This coming Sunday, the end of Ramadan is in a few days. Does that give us reason to believe that there'll be an increase in the attempted terror attacks, or the fact that it's wrapping up is irrelevant when it comes to that? What do you think the attitude is among those who want to attack Israel? Ramadan have any effect on that?
Those who want to attack. Ramadan does have a... It's usually, by the way, we've seen a greater escalation, but if you see the Israeli police and the planning, for which you get no credit, at Har Bayit, that they had tens and tens of thousands of people on individual days, up to 100,000, even more, coming there, with the only incidents that I saw recorded were between Muslim worshippers, between different groups, but Israeli police have had a real presence. They built it in. They took the steps necessary to prevent violence, which have been widely predicted. Unfortunately, the end of Ramadan can become the occasion for this. So then post-Ramadan, when people are no longer fasting, suddenly there's an escalation could take place. But I think all the predictions so far, you got to take with a grain of salt because nobody really knows that, but has taken precautionary measures. And I think what they did, and again, which you get no credit, only criticism, in Yehuda and Shomron in the months before, in fact, even before October 7th, that they went in, they caught huge quantities of weapons, a large number of terrorists from different groups, PIDGE, as well as Hamas, et cetera, that they found the fact they were manufacturing rockets, weapons. Had they not made those discoveries over the last year or whatever that they were have been there, we would have seen a very different situation. We would have seen the fighting taking place from a third front, but out of Israel, from this, the core of Israel, not on its borders. So the, you know, those actions were so extremely important and carried out really with great intelligence and as a precautionary measure, which prevented probably a lot of loss of life. And you know, we have to be worried about what will happen with the Ramadan. I think Israel will be on high alert. As you know, that they've called in reserves. They've canceled all the leaves, in part because of the threats from Iran of an aerial assault or some kind of an attack, either in Israel or abroad. So people should be careful. But the danger internally is still great.
Did you hear what I heard? That I don't know if it's reliable. I'm asking you that the last three terror attacks in Israel over the last few days were all perpetrated by official members of the PA police force. Have you heard that?
I've heard. Well, we know that they've been involved in a number of the incidents all along. You know, and they get identified then as having been members or are members even currently of the Palestinian security forces. And right. Therefore, they often have weapons or they feel that they're immune. But yes, absolutely. It's been a repeated pattern.
Also, back to Congress for a second. How many members of the, you know, combination of the House and Senate would you say were weaponized by the reaction from the White House? I mean, what was it, three members of Congress that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, were felt brave enough to talk about suspending aid to Israel? Was it 15? Like, I mean, you know, how big a movement was this when, again, my expression, the White House weaponized members of Congress to come out publicly with this attitude?
It's hard to give a number. It's certainly not three. It's much bigger number. They should act with caution in this regard, because while they're responding to some of the loud voices, the squad followers, people like that, just look at Senator Fetterman from Pennsylvania, whom when he was running, people did not think he would be a great supporter. And he has turned out to be amazingly a stand-up guy in respect, and doesn't back down in the face of the demonstrators. In fact, tweets them, and his numbers have gone up in Pennsylvania. Wow. And people cite his pro-Israel position. Are some who obviously will go against them because of it. And we have to remember how organized this effort is, how they have foreign funding, but they still represent a small percentage of the people, and that the overwhelming preponderance of American people, they may not have liked what happened with the aid workers. They may not like, you know, they're getting tired of the war in Gaza and the daily pictures and distortions and misrepresentations. But people can't know that is not true. And that's what they see on television or hear in the news reports or read. But still in all, the American people still support Israel overwhelmingly. So I would be very cautious for those officials who just jump on a bandwagon now and use it as an opportunity to be able to show and to prevent demonstrations against them by saying, look, I came out against it. Unfortunately, it included a number of Jewish members of Congress in recent days as well. But I do think that I'm concerned not just about the domestic reaction, but how this foreign governments and say, look, if America is threatening them, Canada would bring all of them have already threatened to cut off arms sales.
Germany, right? Wasn't Germany on?
Talked about limiting, but Germany is less so than the strength of the thing. And Britain represents 1% of the arms sales or something like that. So it's the threat is much the United States. Germany does sell more. And Israel is still dependent. We acknowledge it, and I think Israel acts in that, in accordance with that, and has been receiving the shipments. And we have to credit the administration that they continue. But now, when you start threatening that, and if America does it, all the feel that they have a right, just as when we didn't veto the resolution in the UN, it sent a message to a lot of the countries that they could escalate their criticisms. And
what was the UAE's official position yesterday? They're not cutting off all diplomatic relations with Israel, are they?
No, it does not appear so. I think it was a reprimand, and there was a correction issued afterwards that sort of said that they didn't break diplomatic relations.
And in the last 24 hours, was there a resolution in the UN about Israel and war crimes, Israel and crimes against humanity? I don't know how it goes. It's an official resolution, but I heard something about literally yesterday in the UN, someone bringing up this topic, in light of
they bring it up every day, and every day Israel's in the docket. I don't think that there was a Security Council resolution.
Wow.
And if it was, it just joins the thousands of others.
There are some officials here in the United States who piggybacked on the Glantz statement in Israel, calling for new elections in September. Glantz did not call for new elections now. He called for new elections in September. He said specifically as we approach the first anniversary of the war. Whether he should have said it or not is another story, but the bottom line is he's a member of the war cabinet. Like if it's legitimate for anybody to voice an opinion like that, I would guess that he has a right to do so. There are some American officials, I won't call them out by name at the moment, who piggybacked on that to legitimize their position that, BB's got to go. And I thought that took a lot of nerve. Any reaction to that?
Well, first of all, he was a leader of the opposition together with Lapid. Lapid also issued a call subsequently about having elections. It's the politics of Israel, and right now Bibi is seen as vulnerable. Although the latest polls this past week showed that Bibi's coalition would still retain 58 seats and be the largest party or largest bloc. If elections were held now, but he himself, his popularity has gone down, and Likud's percentage in the Knesset would go down. I think Gantz, who has generally been more responsible than some others, was playing and has to sustain his constituency as he joined the government, the war cabinet, and the government, to some criticism both internally and externally in the Israeli political realms. But he, as you said, he did not say have elections right away or throw BB out right away. He said in September, and people hope that by then things will start to wind down. Right. I think calling for elections now is not the agenda. The agenda right now has to be to deal with the current crises and get this war over, and then have all the political retribution and accounting and everything else will take place. And I'm sure it will be very robust.
And the fact that I called him Glantz instead of Gantz does confirm that I slept only from 2 to 4 this morning. That was it. But hopefully,
I tried not to highlight it.
Yeah, but hopefully tonight, Malcolm. You know how it is. Even with the late Friday start for Shabbos, still everybody hopes that they get everybody around the entire world hopes to have a peaceful and long rest on a Friday night. Certainly well deserved for many. So look, this is the big issue now. You and so many others, for good reason, have pointed out over the last few months that there's one benefit of what's happened over the last 6 months, and hard to believe it's their 26th full Shabbat in captivity, and that's the unity. That's the unity, and we pray that we can move forward with unity, and then, of course, we see the rallies and demonstrations in Israel. I'm not even taking sides on this. I'm just saying that they are happening again now, and these rallies are essentially anti-Bibi, and there's obviously this whole issue with the army service of the Haredi community is dividing people a bit. Although I do think that there'll be some type of compromise with the whole thing. I mean, even with Bibi, I think with Bibi it's harder to get a compromise because he's so beholden to them politically. But I think and I think you alluded to that last week that will probably be worked out. But I fear now what's going to happen. As people, take to the streets again, and God knows what type of atmosphere is going to be fomented from, these activities. I mean, what's your impression as you look at what's happening 6 months later?
Look, I think everything in Israel becomes political, and especially when they think that Netanyahu is vulnerable, that there is growing criticism, but there's also distortion. When you see the demonstrations, people portray it as if the families, all the families of the hostages, it's not true. It's a minority of the family of the hostages. But frankly, anything that they do or say, I understand, and I think they have to be given a lot of leeway because they're in such pain and for so long. But sometimes those who are at this, I spoke to some families and I mentioned someone, and they said that it was a distant relative, but everybody now claims, can speak as a relative of a hostage. And there is some backlash to it, saying that this should not become a political football. This really was a unifying thing for all of Israel. It still remains a unifying cause for all of Israel to get out, and whatever needs to be done, it should be done to get them out. This is, the tensions in Israel. We have 100,000 people still displaced from the north, or 80,000, who see their houses come under fire, rocket fire every day. We have to understand and see the tensions that they're living through and see it through their eyes. We are all pained when we read about a soldier dying or somebody being hurt. We don't think about the thousands of amputees, the thousands of wounded soldiers, because Israel didn't carpet bomb. Israel was protecting civilian life and trying to minimize the damage that they went, on the ground, door to door, carpet bombing every place where they knew terrorists were hiding, including the hospitals, including schools and the other facilities, let alone all of the underground infrastructure. So I'm saying this because I hear it sometimes, who are committed but who are wary now and start to raise all these questions. There are a lot of legitimate questions. There's a lot of accountability. Now, we need the solidarity to be sustained, that all these young people who are, and older middle-aged people who are putting their lives on the line every sec that they're out there, and they have done a great job. People don't realize what they fought. Can you imagine fighting a war in the New York subway system? That's what they did in that tunnel, the network of tunnels. People really, it's as big as the New York subway system or the London Metro. And think if we had to send our troops down every day and what we would do, what destruction would have come about. And Israel tried to act in accordance with international law. And many experts who review it say there's no war crime. Even the United States government has said there's not any war crimes. And that's why the killing the seven looms so large.
Yeah, understood. Finally, only because I think it's worth reiterating, because we had listeners who asked about it specifically. We know that Iran has threatened the way they have those who live in Israel and embassies around the world. With that in mind, I know Pesach's coming up. I know we have big Shabbatot between now and then. Literally, Shabbos HaGadol, big Shabbaton. All I'm saying is that synagogues, organizations, and those institutions that are noticeably, identifiably Jewish, you would encourage them to be aware of these threats. When you hear the word embassies, I think we also have to keep in mind Jewish targets around the world.
It doesn't have to be even that the government instructs it. It could be, what they call lone wolves. They're not lone wolves, but they come out of the systems that, and we've seen individual acts of violence at the demonstrations, right, and let alone what we've seen on the camp where Jewish students have been physically assaulted, where the level of hate rhetoric is rising. Caution is absolutely the my word, but not to cancel. Everything should go ahead. Shul services, all of the things that we have in our community should go ahead, but do it with Seho, coordinate with, make sure that events are handled right, that people be more alert, that be support for the Shomrim groups and others, that the patrolling communities don't unnecessary risks, work with all of the Jewish communal agencies that are providing assistance. I think it's very regrettable that the budget for the non-profit Security grants was cut by $30 million at a time when it should have been increased, because the needs are that much greater. The dangers right now are greater to religious institutions and schools, et cetera, to take precautions. We should not drop our guard now, and it doesn't mean just when they call a demonstration. It means about what happens on the streets. And people walk Friday night, and you should have people accompany them if they're elderly or kids going to places, because you just don't want to tempt anything unnecessary. I don't think we should panic. I think Iran reluctant to do anything in the United States, but it doesn't mean that somebody won't.
I thank you. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll speak again next week.
Good Shabbos for everybody. Be safe.
Yeah, amen to that. Malcolm Homeline. Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, weekly update. Don't forget the rally on Sunday, everybody. Demonstration on behalf of Israel, on behalf of the IDF, on behalf of the hostages. 47th Street, 2nd Avenue, New York City, 12 noon. 47th Street, 2nd Avenue, New York City, 12 noon.